Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley and I'm joined by Vangelda and Crack. We had a long weekend of football action, so we'll jump right into it, starting nowhere else but the Manchester Derby, where Man United snatched a very impressive 2-1 win against Man City. Believe me, I'm not being biased, but like, according to everything that is being said, according to all the articles that are being written, according to all the sweet things we are seeing in the news, in the media, Man United snatched a very impressive win against Man City. Tele, without much further ado, make her introduce our Professor Crack himself. Tele, how are you feeling?
I'm actually on a high. Like, the prince that was promised is gradually delivering, because there was a lot of first time in a while. As I said last time, I really don't have any expectation from Amorim, because I want him to build on his formation. So by the end of the season, he knows the players that he retain, the players he'll buy, and the ones and all that. So me, if you follow, I go into matches, not really. If we lose, I just want to see how the players play, they react, the ones they're born, and all those things. So going into the City match, I think I was kind of 50-50, right? The reason why I was 50-50 is we've had a terrible record at Etihad for 4 years. And at City, you don't know when they were going to bounce back. It could be a United team with a new coach, all right? And also, the Europa match we played, I wasn't really impressed. I wasn't really impressed with how we played. Even though we won, we still had to like struggle to win. And also, I wasn't really on a high like that. So, but for the first time going into it, I was 50-50 because I knew that City 2 isn't in the best of forms. It isn't in the best of forms as well. So anything could happen. It was a toss-up. But for a large number of the game, I was really impressed with our defensive shape. One, I was really impressed with limited City. I think they've had the lowest number of touches in opposition box this season against us. They are just 18, right? And how defensively sound we were, how we still match them in the air, because we had Maguire and Delete at the back. We had them, you understand? So that was really good as well, because I mean, we've been conceding from corners. Yes, we conceded a goal from a corner, but it wasn't direct. It was a ricochet of Ahmad, direct, a lucky goal. It happened. City wasn't really threatening us from open play. Haaland was useless as well, because he had two big guys that could match him. And to some extent, sometimes even Lisandro Martinez was giving him trouble. And we played a strategy where, if you check, Licha was always stepping into midfield to man mark De Bruyne, to limit his passes, which also worked. That's what I'm saying, that as a team, we're defensively very sound. So I always say that, yes, Onana is prone to mistakes, but last season was criminal for him to be facing 20 shots on an average per game, even against bottom feeders. That's a recipe for disaster. But this match like this, the whole of second half, City didn't have a single shot on target. I don't remember the last time I ever saw that. Right? I don't remember the last time I saw that. City, so... And once again, Ahmad, and I've said it time and time here, he, to me, is our best player. And I've said it here this season. He's our best player. And Ten Hag was an idiot for how he treated him. Because you can't tell me you bench Ahmad and say that it's because Anthony performed better than him in training. What do you mean? The guy, even the way Ahmad plays, he's a player that he always gives his 100%. Even if you are stronger than him, he will still come after you. He's relentless. So you can't tell me that he was so bad in training that a shit player that we see on match day deserves to play ahead of him. He plays today, performs, and he bench him the next match. Give him confidence. As he said, Amorim wasn't really... Maguire's injury and things, so we had to be playing Mazraoui as right wing back. But I always said that if we have Maguire back and he's fully fit, Ma should go back to the right wing back. He did a brilliant job on Doku yesterday. Even though sometimes we were doubling him, but one-on-one, Doku couldn't complete a single thing on against him yesterday. Mars is our second best player. Said it. You understand? And then if you go up top, Ahmad went back to his number 10 position. Behind the striker. That's his best position. He was there. The only problem United still have is how to transition from defense to attack. Midfield defense, they know what they are doing. We are not open. We are not really easy to play against when we are coming. Like, we can defend very well. We are solid, but it's how we transition to attack. It's like there's always lack of synergy among midfield and attack, and actually the two teams behind the striker. There's always like a gap. There's always miscommunication and things. Either overhead pass, clear, still not finding their position, or when one is attacking, the other one doesn't know where to be. So fine details, little details, we are going to get it. We are going to get there. But personally, we go into matches with confidence. City went 1-0 up, and I wasn't still faced because they weren't playing anything. They went 1-0 up, and the entire second half, we were still dominating. And if I say dominating, it wasn't about possession. It was about how confident we were on the ball, how we could transition, hold them, weren't afraid of them attacking, coming our way, and all those things. So there's that. That was an impressive win. We've not won at Etihad in 4 years. The last coach to win at Etihad was Ole, the one and only. He was the only one that won at Etihad. We've not. Like, first, see. First win at Etihad for nearly 4 years, right? We've done that. And prior to that, as you said, like, see some of the stats. First league win by 4 goals in years, Amorim. First away win in Europe for nearly 2 years, Amorim. First away win at the top six side for 3 years, Amorim. First win at Etihad for nearly 4 years, Amorim. So it makes you believe that if he gets a transfer window, and he profiles players that can play in this formation and bring it, you can only hope for it better. And I am happy that we came with a win because it helps the players' confidence. And the English press couldn't get an agenda because he benched Rashford. So there was no agenda to go to. And he benched Garnacho. No savior complex to come and talk about that. This boy comes in, pops his here and there. So yeah, there is that. It was a statement win for the coach, for the players' confidence, and for the fans. Because, as I said, back him, give your all to him, until he shit, then he sack him. But me, I don't move like that in where coach come first, then he won't make you feel, because he not be the coach he wants. Me, once you done the United, I'll support you till you are not good anymore. Then I want a change. But I don't like the people that they don't like giving coaches a chance. Every day they want to be different. They want to be the ones that go like, oh, Abi, I talk. Abi, I said it. Are you always trying to cause doom first? Like, come on, bro. Like, don't do that. So it was an impressive win for me.
So I agree 100% with Crack. Very impressive win. And, you know, as I keep saying, initially, I was one of the people who, I just had a little skepticism about Amorim's three back, because like I wasn't sure about how compatible our players were with that system. Obviously, with just a few weeks of just being able to work with the players, we can see a huge improvement. Like yesterday's win, for me, the main reason why I'm happy is that it's not like the typical smash and grab type of win that we usually record against Man City. We've beaten Man City quite a few times at the Etihad, like not under Ten Hag, boom, but under Ole and before. We've had a few wins against Man City. Ole himself, I think Ole had like 3 wins against Pep at the Etihad or something impressive like that. So it's not something that is entirely new. But what is new is the fact that like we actually went toe-to-toe with them. If you look at all the stats in terms of number of shots, chances created, all of those stats, all the positive stats, even tackles, we get tackles past them. I'm looking at the positive stats. We did better than them in every department. Even possession, we almost matched them. Like, I think the possession ended with them being 50-something%. And I'm used to seeing United getting 30% and below at the Etihad. So, like, there's so many good things to look at from this win. And as Crack said again, I'm mad. Charlie, me, you know, say me, I'm the biggest fanboy from way back. Me, I stood by him through thick and thin. Boys know hey, nothing about hey, Rangers.
What do you say as we?
Please.
What do you mean by
me, I'm the biggest.
Don't do that. I've always been there.
When I was watching Rangers matches, when I was watching Sunderland matches,
I was watching.
Niggas know that the trenches inside plus me.
I was watching.
Back when, Charlie, I fought for this boy, and me, I keep saying, even now that he's beginning to find his feet, I'm still hurt because he should have been on this level long before now. It shouldn't be in 2024 that he's finally becoming like a mainstay in the first team. He was signed in 2020 or 2021. Yeah, like 3-4 years now. The guy is now being given a chance. It's not like he wasn't good back then. Even back then, the few chances he got, he was being impressive. But it started from Ole. Ole never trusted him for some reason. Ten Hag, the such a fool. He played Omari Forcing ahead of him. Omari Forcing. And for context, Omari Forcing is now at Monza in Italy, where he's played 4 games. That's the caliber of player who Ten Hag was playing ahead of Ahmad. In addition to Anthony. Anthony, because the past 2 games, he has shown some promise with me.
Hey.
I won't lay off him for it. You know, we say, I think he's good now, but 2 games in a row, he's done something small. So, for once, make
the
give
guy
him some
play,
small
the guy plays
please.
Some shots from the edge of the box, make a screen yesterday. He said he shows up. But you see, talking about Ahmad, last time I was telling you that ever since I started supporting United, I've not seen a player go out on multiple loans and come back and still be an important figure. Because usually when you go 2 or 3 loans, they sell you. After when you come back, they put you on a chopping block. But this guy has fought, gone through the fire and come back as a... And the reason why I wasn't really against the loan was, if you watch, when we got Ahmad, first thing was his weakness. And it was injury prone. Right? I think the physicality of the English Premier League and his first this one was really worrying him. So him going to Rangers, that Scottish League, remember even there they were playing a different position. We watched a match, Rangers versus Celtics, and the way they were going in for the boy, I was like, this is the kind of fire he wants. And then that helped the physicality. He moved to Sunderland, and this is where the confidence came. The fans wanted him. The club wanted him. The coach wanted him. And he was their best player and won their player of the season. So sometimes that works into the player's confidence, or that rather than him coming to United and sit on the bench. Constant play helps. And then he came, Ten Hag, with all these lies and promises. Anytime Ten Hag plays the boy, he performs. But for some reason, he couldn't give him consistent play. Even this season, self that he was last season when he was still benching him for Anthony in nonsense matching, he was the same person that scored the most important goal in the semi-finals of the FA Cup against Liverpool and took us to the finals. Last season, anytime he played, he was integral. Either coming on second half, changing the game, he comes to calm the ball. You see the difference between him and Bruno and the rest, and we're always talking about it. But then this coach, we don't know what he was seeing. I see Abu Abe Wua sometimes operate. So that was Ten Hag.
Is it me? For me, like, I do admit that like the physicality and all of that was a problem initially. But me, I still think that the delay in his development is still down to how poorly he was handled. Because in his first season, particularly that transition, the thing that really stunted his development is the fact that from the moment United announced that they were going to sign him, United announced that they were going to sign him like 6 months before in the summer window. So he was going to join in January. From that point, Atlanta also stopped playing him. So even though he was on the verge of the Atlanta first team, by then he had made a few substitute appearances. He had scored his first goal. It's like, because he had agreed to join United, they too, they decided to stop putting efforts into developing him. So yeah. From the time the United transfer was announced to the time he joined United, I think he only made about 3 substitute appearances. So 3 substitute appearances in 6 months. When he came to United, he played for the under-21s for, I think, about the first 3-4 games. And then it became very obvious that he's too good for under-21s. Because every game he was playing, he's scoring, he's assisting. It was very clear that he's too good for under-21s. But at the same time, it's like Ole didn't think he was ready for first team. So it's like he was hanging in that in that void between under-21s and the first team, where it's like they feel like he's too good for under-21s, but he's not good enough for the first team. So from January to the end of the season, he only played like about 200 minutes in total. So that entire first season, like between Atlanta and United, he had played like 400 minutes of football. 400 minutes of football is equivalent to about, what is it, 590 minutes, 690 minutes. That's a very small, like it's a very small amount of football for a player in like the most critical period of his development. Because as a teenager, that's when you should be playing a lot of football. If you're not playing for the first team, you're not coming off the bench, at least be playing under 21 football. So that first year, the development was handled very, very poorly. It was actually like the second season when the injury started settling, coming and all of that. He went on loan to Rangers. At the time, they were in the middle of a title race, so they didn't want to risk too much on somebody who had not played too much football. He played for United too a few times. He scored for United in the Europa against AC Milan. After that, he was condemned. Nobody saw anything from him again. So his development for me is really down to how poorly he's been handled since he came to United. But I mean, right now he's beginning to show what we've known about him for all these years. And beyond Ahmad, to crack mention Mazraoui, I keep saying like probably our best value for money signing we've made in the past more than, maybe it might even be post-Fergie. For everybody who we didn't get on free, he might be our best value for money signing, because 12, 13 million for him, a player who he gives you consistent 7 over 10. Maybe he might not give you 10 over 10, but he will give you 5. You know, he'll give you 6. Every game, consistent
eight,
7.
Eight,
and those,
eight.
And those are the type of players who you build your team around. The best teams like in the world, usually they might have maybe about 6 players like that who are very consistent. They give you consistent 7, 8 over 10. And then maybe you might have those Mavericks who maybe today they might give you 10 over 10, tomorrow they might give you 5 over 10. You don't really know what will happen, but those are the ones you build the core of your team around. And then the only, if I'm coming to negatives, like the only negative I'd have, or maybe the only deficiency we have in the team at the moment, is the left side of the team. Basically, whether the left side of the attack, the left side of the defense, like, because I'm a huge fan of Dalo, everybody knows, but like, him having to play on the left for all these games, like, he's not entirely comfortable there. Like, he's able to do a decent job there, but for the left wing back, come on, for the crack. For the left wing back position, he's expected to do a lot more attacking. And for somebody who, even on the right, like, attacking is not his biggest strength. If you realize, most of the time, he's isolated on the left with a lot of space, being expected to probably create chances. Like, there's plenty of times where they do a crossball to the other side of the pitch. He's there, acres of space. He's expected to run, deliver a good cross. First of all, you're expecting him to deliver a cross on his weaker foot. That's a problem. You usually find him being isolated because, like, he doesn't have a proper left winger, like the same way you have a right winger on the right, who gives him support, makes runs to help him in the attack. Usually he's isolated on the left. So me, Dalo, dear me, he's my boy. Crowd will give me eyes, I don't care, he's my boy. And yeah, at the moment, he's going through a tough patch, but it's not entirely his fault. There are some deficiencies. Please, crack, he was our player of the season. In my opinion, he gets the award for in-house. He was voted by a panel of his peers.
In the land of the blind.
He'd be the best blind man for the team inside. So, and that's one of the deficiencies I'd highlight. That one is not Amorim's fault at all. Like, it's not his fault that that's what he came to meet. Luke Shaw, he's basically done. Like, I don't see him coming back into the team. Malasia, he was never good before he got injured. So, hopefully, when the January window comes, he might be able to address those deficiencies they have. But yeah, generally, I'm over the moon. Even though Charlie United right now, I'll be like, we lose, we did 13th. We win, we did 13th. We draw, we did 13th. I know the kind of last time we move. Like, every time after we win, I go rush, go check the table, see, hey, Charlie, where we reach. I open the thing, 13th. I said, Charlie Ten Hag, what you do with? If I go that, from the outside looking in, how do you feel about United, the new look United?
So for the third team, you know, I just tell you something. If it's so nice, good, your next match, you go go loose or you go draw. You go figure you go left the third team for. No, last season, if it's so you do, we did 12, like 8 years, then we still did there. You go win 12, you go lose 12, you go draw 12. So you make cool plus the third team small. But I think we all agree that Amorim is a good coach. I think when he first came in, I said, just give him the time. This season is probably a write-off. So he should be allowed to do what he wants to do. Make the squad as lean as he wants to make it or as fat as he wants to make it. Just give him the license to do whatever he wants to do so that you can move forward as a team. And I think that this is the period we call growing pains. So you are growing, but it comes with a lot of pain. So you will have those odd games like the one you lost last week where you probably shouldn't lose, but some way, somehow, you go lose them. Then you go have victories like Yestinyon where you are not exactly sure if you win or not, but you just turn up that day. It's like that. Until, say, like April or March, when the squad is settled in the way he wants to play, he has maybe a consistent 15 players that know they are the ones that he's going forward with. And then probably talking to your upper echelons and, you know, kind of trying to begin to trim the squad. Those that he doesn't want, they'll start, you know, looking for teams to sell them to or put it together. How much we go sell this player for, how much you go sell that one for, and things like that. I think that personally, I don't want United to do well, of course. If United does well, it doesn't help me in any way, shape, or form. And it will be unbearable on this podcast if you guys are doing well. So I hope you would stay the 13th there and you don't do well. However, I can understand why United fans would be happy. I think yesterday you played well. I think on the balance of things, it was a deserved victory. I think you were the better team. City didn't look like they were ready to compete or they were even trying to compete, which is a big worry for me. I can't seem to figure out. They've done that a lot in this. They are 1-11 run that they've been on, where it looks like they are just sleepwalking their way through the game. I don't know whether it's the players, it's the coach, everybody in together. I can't tell what's going on there. But, you know, you can only beat what is in front of you. And on the day where City felt or looked like they were not ready to take the points, United's players stepped up. United's players tried their best to prove to the coach that they are able to play. I just want to talk and deviate a bit from the football itself and talk about the two players he dropped, Rashford and Garnacho. These are two of your most important players, one might say. They may not be good.
Garnacho is actually our top scorer this season so far.
Yeah, so they may not be good or they may not be brilliant. But it was such a statement that I don't know why. And I don't know why he dropped him. I think it's probably disciplinary or something like that, right?
Oh, but okay. I can tell you why.
He said he'll be disciplinary. So
he said he'll be disciplinary. Me, all I know be said and say Garnacho, he'll leak the starting lineup, you know. He didn't leave giving, bro. Where Rashford is on, I don't know what Rashford do. But so, he said something along. Okay, crack, please.
So, maybe so today, go actually, yeah. So today, I watched the discussion on what's the name? Wright and this one show. I've forgotten. And he had an extensive discussion. Yeah, Kelly and Wright. Apparently, right. So what he was saying, the breakdown was he pays attention not just to team play, right? Like how you interact in training, how you talk to your fellow, this one, your body language, like all those things, and how you dress, how you carry yourself and all those things, right? So he wants to bring back at utmost professionalism. And it's not just about your form, it's about everything, right? He talks about, so he was specific in training. So you know that thing where somebody like Rashford, right? whether we like it or not, that boy is a 37-year-old boy, but he's still one of the most integral players in United. Forget his age, right? Because he's a darling boy, a young boy.
You mean
one
of... 27, not of 37.
No, he's 27. Yeah.
Yeah, he said 37.
No, I said 27. Oh. Oh, I thought 37.
Hey, you got good.
27-year-old boy, you understand? He's one of the integral players in all those things. Like, he has grown through the rank. He has been in United for 8 years now or something like that, right? So, he wants to cut influence. So, that's what he said. So, if you watch, it was like how you even relate to your teammates. You understand? If maybe you are being spoken to, how you carry yourself and all those, to be training on all those things. So, definitely there's an attitude problem over there. Right, and how you carry yourself. So he was like, where in a club where people are losing their jobs, which is true, you have to give your best every time. And when we win, and when you win, that is how the club is going to get money first. That is how you are going to make the fans too happy first. Because right now, the ticket prices they go up, they already they demonstrate and things. So the only way you can beat that is with good performances. So then go pay, then go complain, but they still go pay camp. So if you are not here to give your best, like even their attitude to pressing, their body language, you've always said that thing. And it translates to training. So the guy really not talk, say, like, it was because they went against his witches. No, he said, like, it's a bubble. He watches everything. You have to take every boss. Because he was like, he wants to take us to the professionalism to the absolute best. Because United is a big club. And to take us back there, you have to set some certain standard that you don't compromise on it. You understand? Because if you have players like Casemiro and things being professional, who are winning, you know, who's all trading. And if you make an example of somebody like that, players like Ahmad and things will go like, bro, I have to give my best every time. Because even if these guys are loved by their club and seeing that this is happening to them, how much less me? You understand? So if you do that, let them know that, bro, would Jimmy say, this one, not because of discipline, but because you are not giving your best. It's understandable. And so winning made it make more sense.
And let me just add that the thing about Rashford and the body language thing, I think it's a very, very valid point, because for the past, I would say maybe for the past few months or maybe even the past year, you can actually see a huge switch in Rashford's body language. I don't know what he's showing them on the training ground, but on the pitch, he has the like air of somebody who has just given up. Like, if something good happened, fine. If something bad happened, fine. He did. So right now, it's like, if maybe they sub him early, he's fine. He doesn't show any frustration. He just go jog off. He's fine. Nothing. If he spoil chance, fine. If maybe he's in a good position, somebody was supposed to pass the ball to him and the person didn't pass the person short, fine. Like, he doesn't care. Like, the way Hoyland didn't get the pass from Ahmad the other day and he was just ranting and raving. Rashford just doesn't care anymore. It's like, he's just comfortable where he is. I don't think he has that drive to be better anymore. So
could it just be because for a long time, he just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And at this point, he's just exhausted. Like, he has nothing more to give. And I'm not saying that he's right. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying in that period of pushing, he was your best player or whatever. But there was a time that if Rashford misses a chance, you can tell from his face that he's hurt that he has missed the chance. There was a time that when he was off form, he would be trying. Like, you know how we say if you are off form, just keep it simple, do the basic things, and it will come. Because the thing, your body, like Tuchel was talking about Timo Werner at some point, and he was telling Timo Werner, don't try too hard to score, because you've already scored so many goals. You know how to score goals. So just give your body the time and the space and allow your body to come and then begin to feel it. Just do the basic things and do them well, and then build the confidence bit by bit. And he was doing that for a very long time. I don't know whether maybe because the sporting structure has changed now, there is a difference in the kind of support he receives, or maybe the criticisms that have come against him for years on years, and we are all testament to that. Even days that Rashford will be the best player on the pitch, the next one will come and see some article in The Sun or Daily Mail or Telegraph or something attacking Rashford, you know. And it has gone on for so long that at this point, he's just like, you know what, fuck it. Excuse my friend, but I can't be bothered anymore. And it's unfortunate maybe for him that now a coach has come in who absolutely requires that you fight every single day. And he probably has nothing more to offer. If that is what is going on, then I wonder or I imagine that is this the right path for Amorim to take to solve that problem with Rashford? Again, I don't know. It's not my team.
See,
so maybe you guys are best
let me tell you
to help us understand that.
Smiley said this season. This wasn't this season, from last season. Two seasons ago, he scored 30 goals in all competition. Right? He was our savior. I'm not going to lie. That was one of his best seasons. Or it's even his best season ever in terms of goals ever playing. Like, the following season, it dipped. It continued. It was last season that we gave him 350,000, right? Going to the season. So ever since then, Rashford hasn't played three good games in a row for a long time. He hasn't. Even the season he scored 30 goals, it was today he scores. Go and check how his goal scoring record, right? Like, there were matches he wasn't showing up. Then he comes, banks 2 here, gets 2 here, do this and that. But he was never consistent, right? All I'm saying is, with Rashford issue, most of them, they are off the pitch. He's losing concentration. He's not concentrating, and he doesn't have good advices around him. He got new girl recently. But then that wasn't the point. I just think Rashford has silly brothers around him, just like Pogba. You understand? Because anytime Rashford does something, safe, then PR. He wanted to be a PR darling. Either his brothers will come tweet something nonsense later, or he now will come post some cryptic something or do something. Like, and people could see it. People could see right through him. Like, from Greenwood issues and things, how this guy was moving. Bro, they accuse your teammate of abuse. The next thing, you are posting a lovey-dovey post with you and your woman. We see all these things. Because people are not dumb. Like, when they are blaming something on this one, then in Brago can tweet something about how this and this, why it's not Rashford's fault. You get it. So it's like, we all say, why can't you keep your brother in check? If they held Pogba to the same standard, why can't they do the same for Rashford? Keep your people in check. That's my issue. So when you realize that, bro, you are getting distracted from what is paying your bills. This can't care for the needy thing you do. No, you are doing it because you are being paid by United. But you make your guy do like, I have to please the people, please everyone, be a media darling. Bro, you can't force love. You are a black man. You are a black man. Just know it. Whatever you do, be I so many. Today, they are just waiting for your downfall and drop you. So focus on the things and let somebody else handle it. So a lot of distractions around Rashford. Like, first, I used to defend him. Anytime people talk about he's hanging out with rappers, he's flying here, doing this. I always say that, look, as long as it's not affecting his play. But then, it gets to a point where, Charlie, you can't defend him again. You understand? Because I was like, I'm always like, at least fanfool me. If things are not going well, it's true. If things are not going well, say, fanfool me. But don't give people a chance to talk about you more when they already want you. Do you get my points? So, like, I mean, yeah, for a while, for years now, United have lack quality and all those things. But, bruh, Rashford has had chances. So, that one, yeah.
And the last thing I would say on Rashford is that he's, like, probably the most frustrating player you can have in your team, the most frustrating caliber or category of player you can have in your team, because at the beginning of every season, you never know what you're going to get from him. And that's what really separates players like him from the actual world-class players like Salah and the rest. When you talk about how his mentality may be like, because he's been doing this for a long time, so right now maybe they're fatigued. Like, world-class players, they don't give up until their body just gives up on them. Like, every season, you know what you're going to get from them. Salah, if the season they start, and I say Van Gaal that they come best plus you, Salah will score more than 20 goals. You know, go take that bet, because you know say Salah will score more than 20 goals, like at least in all competitions. Rashford, if he score 40 goals this season, and next season I say make we bet, Rashford will score minimum 20 goals this season. You go bet, because you know that it's very possible he no go reach 20 goals. The season after he scored 30 goals, he followed it up with what? 8 goals in all competition. Before that, he had scored 20-something goals. The following season, he scored 5. So look at that. One season, he scored 20-something. Another season, he scored 5. The following season, he scored 30. The following season, he scored 8. That's the worst type of player you want to have in your team, because you can't even plan. Like, in your mind, okay, I need a front three who can combine and give me 50 goals. And in your mind, you think, okay, Rashford, Goffi give me 20. He go shock you and give you 5. You can't plan with players like that in your team. So, like, me, even for me, if it was up to me, we would have cut our losses on Rashford long ago. It's long overdue. Even after he had the 30-goal season, I would have sold him that summer, because that'd be when you go fist camp somebody into thinking they have a proper player, because the following season, he will show you in true colors. So, me, yeah, I'm happy it's happening now, but it's also long overdue. This is something that should have happened like maybe 2-3 years ago.
He's going to Arsenal, isn't he?
Amen.
And now we don't care.
No. Like, I mean, it's all primed for him to go to Arsenal. Man. I didn't like.
Back 2.2.
Yeah, it just looks like it. But one more thing, and this is an off the pitch issue, and this is because we also didn't get the chance to record last week. Because anyway, congratulations to the Republic of Ghana. But Dan Ashworth, what's going on there? Because look. You guys waited for about 5 months for him to join the club. Then after 5 months, them suck up. Say he's not what, like what I ordered versus what I got. He do you people.
So,
what's going on there?
This one, from everything I've read, first of all, let me just say that this sporting director market, or this sporting director role, Ankasa, it's a role that a lot of people tend to get more credits than they are due for. So sometimes you see a sporting director and people have this idea of them that they are going to every stadium scouting players personally and they are doing all that groundwork. But then it turns out that they have a lot of people doing all the groundwork, and then maybe they then just go kind of rubber stamp something and collect all the credits. So from everything I've read about Dan Ashworth over the past week, maybe some people just speculate, but people have made a lot of sense from what I've read. It seems like he's more of an operations person. He's the person who ties everything together. So he's the person who creates that healthy environment for everybody to work in. So yeah, like he will bring the scouts on board. He will bring the technical people on board. He will collect all their opinions and everything, and then help to just make a well-oiled machine. But the problem is that United were looking for somebody who know the streets, somebody who has the talent ID to build like a squad. You are not looking for an operations person. So from what I've read, apparently Jim Ratcliffe was expecting him to have more street knowledge. Like apparently when they were looking for a new manager, Ashworth, Ratcliffe and everybody, like they were looking to Ashworth to present a good list of viable managers to get. And apparently Ashworth was recommending that they hire a data team, a data company, to come and run the data on who should be the next manager, something along those lines. Ratcliffe, to you 80-something year old man, me I hire somebody for the job, you tell me say make I go hire
your man son be stingy towards, so you say what? Hey.
He's not be stingy. Like for him, I hired you to do this job, and you're telling me make I go hire a data company to help us with this.
Will I use
he's
your
expecting pay? You yeah, he's expecting you to have the knowledge to like recommend somebody. And apparently that's basically what has been happening. Apparently there's been a lot of friction ever since he came. It looks like Omar Berada, to the CEO, he's more hands-on than people expect. So there's also a lot of
what I heard is that they expected him, Omar Berada, you know, for CEO, a lot of CEOs, that concentration is more commercial than sporting.
The big picture things.
Yeah, but apparently Omar Berada also likes the sporting part. Actually, even probably a bit more. And he has a very extensive, extensive football diary.
Yeah.
So if you open in phone, he they call somebody from Spain, then they call another person from Portugal, then they call another person from Italy, then they go call somebody from Ghana, they go call somebody from Nigeria. Next, you go here, no, pa, 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 pa. He go pull some talent from Brazil in back camp. Because his diary is extensive. So, for instance, like, I've also done a lot of reading, a lot of listening, trying to investigate what they're going for there. If the things I see from my side, some or what they happen. And look, at the end of the day, when you have a new management, so now it will happen. As it happened, my team, that you put the tells you, we don't know what they do, but we know talk to you, people don't know.
No, I beg, it's not a calamity like it. Let's not even go there. Let's not even
it's go not, there. How is ours a calamity?
No, let's not even go there. So don't come and act like, no, let's not even go there.
See, all at the talk we see, it's something that I want us to keep an eye on. That whole situation there. It's something I think you guys should keep your eye on. Because now what do? Do they leave the technical director and just say, okay, Omar, you delay the sports now, you take care of the sports.
So another thing, so you not to cut you, right? But then another thing.
No, that's fine.
So what I was reading and all is like, even though your man still had a chance to recommend coaches, it was the caliber of coaches who was recommended. Brentford.
The sales manager is it Thomas Frank?
The Brentford coach, the Bournemouth coach.
Frank?
The Brentford coach.
Frank is not that bad.
Are you mad? It's not like United.
United job is a different ball game. You see how this thing, Amorim Kami, they complain about how the number of interviews he's had to do. Say Sporting, if you do like 4 interviews in a month, they come United, they do 4 interviews and in 2 days and things. Like, it's a very different ball game.
So he recommended Brentford, Bournemouth, Newcastle, and also at the end of the day, you still said they should give Ten Hag another year when clearly Jim Ratcliffe wanted him gone, right? And it wasn't just about even the profiling of the coach. The caliber of players he was profiling and trying to get us to buy, that one too was there. You know, even though like it took time for him to come, it's like he did his homework before coming. And so it didn't meet like what Sir Jim wanted. And Sir Jim wants to run a ship where he wants to reduce mistakes as possible, because the project and things he wants to do, no, we don't have the luxury of buying a player and trying to buy the same player for that, another player for that position in the next year. Do you get it? So he wants,
you get Chelsea money,
yeah, we don't get Chelsea, City money and all those things, right? We can't buy like 50 or 60 players per window and things. We can't do that. You understand? So, because we have a stadium to build, we have a lot of things to do. Do you get it? So, like, that one is there. And whatever we do, he's a billionaire. He has to recoup something. But then the difference is that this is a billionaire that is not just focused on the business side. He's focused on taking United to the next level because he's a fan as well. Do you get it? He loves the club, loves football. He wants to see United go. So most of these things, and I think the biggest thing is that they misprofiled him. That's the thing. They misprofiled him. And
so Frank. So if they have misprofiled him, and maybe we can say credit to them for identifying their mistakes and doing away with it, but they've lost money in the process of misprofiling him.
So
who is holding them to account?
So the thing
you go, if you make mistake, if me, I make small mistake.
So you see, based on what Van Gelder is saying, I understand that part too, but it's not just be small mistake. It's something, you see, I'm early, they nip it in the bud. Why you won't make it continue then? We can't afford 3 windows of mistakes. So we've seen it all. We know if you afford 3 windows of mistakes again. Like, yeah, bro, you hold this one because you can't blame Mama. Yeah, you hold this one. Yeah, Ashwin. He was the lowest hanging fruit. Hold up. Yeah, understand? Hold up. Just hold up.
And the main thing for Ratcliffe too is that he's an old man who has bought his boyhood club. He wants to see success instantly. He's not about to hanging with this mistake they've made for another 2 years just because he's trying not to make the club look bad or make the club look ridiculous for doing such a thing. Like, it won't be say, Charlie, we've made a mistake. We've recognized that we've made a mistake. Let's just rip the bandaid off the sore and just get it on with, because there's no time to now wait and try and do PR and make it seem like, yeah, we try and manage the situation and everything. The mistake that we make, you know that, like, we've just accepted it. Let's just move on.
And if there's somebody I'll trust, it's a billionaire. I always trust successful businessmen to make business decisions, because they know this guy. So exactly. he has calculated, definitely done his calculation, and realized that, bro, right now this loss will be lesser. For you know, maybe in a package in a year's time when you want to sack him, it will be higher. In 2 years' time when you want to sack him, it will be higher. You wouldn't know. All the sales are and, there, so.
And in any case, they say it'd be mutual. They said it was mutual. So it looks like both sides were just not happy. Apparently, Ashworth himself too, he just wasn't happy with the situation he came to meet. So it's just an amicable solution. But yeah, I understand the caution Van Gelder is trying to exercise, because in the end, the concern I have is that maybe in our attempt to build a strong structure and everything, you might be putting too many cooks in the kitchen. Because, like, you have a lot of people who are wanting to do the same job. Because even right now, apparently, the talk is that they might not even replace him. Because Wilcox is also impressing Berada and Ratcliffe a lot. So he might end up in the job.
And that's the thing. If, at the end of the day, it's a Berada thing, I think that's what the issue is. The issue is that the CEO is supposed to take the commercial half. Then the sporting director takes the sporting half. There's a discussion and an amicable agreement that usually comes through. If you're making a sporting decision, it must make sense commercially as well. So that's where the discussion comes. But Omar Berada also has that kind of like, he likes the sporting side. Way it we didn't, because for instance,
he pull him from sporting departments.
When you went for Amorim, it was technically, it's supposed to be the national that's supposed to negotiate and then bring the contract and everything. Then Omar Berada looks at it with the finance reference, say yes or no, wait for Bicano. Then he say, this is what we can do. Let's wait till November. No, let's agree there. But it was Omar Berada who did all the negotiations. He negotiated for Amorim.
Don't know anybody. You know, get contacts. Then you just know somebody houseboy for the place where you go to third party. Somebody to get direct contacts. You they go through. They go to third party.
And at the end of the day,
you know, when I first say you don't get links. You know, when I first say you don't get links.
You don't get links. Don't be anybody.
But yeah, I mean, then I just want. I thought it would be good to talk about that as well, since it happened unexpected. Unexpectedly, but I thought it would be good to also just touch on that briefly before we move on.
Moving on, let's talk a bit about the newly crowned title hopefuls, Chelsea. The people then they try hide away from the title chaser or the title contender tag. But whether you like it or not, you've spent over $1 billion, you are playing some good football, so you are going to be touted as being in the mix. Last 2 weeks, you were still trying to hide away from that tag. But at the moment, like, you are now firmly ahead of Arsenal in the title race. You are playing maybe arguably the best football in the league. Do you think it is time to be taken seriously as a title contender? And don't come and give us this whole talk about we are just trying to make top four and blah, blah, blah. Do you think it is a realistic possibility that Chelsea might win the title this season?
All Chelsea Football Club is looking for is to make the magic 40 points so that we avoid relegation. You know, we are so, you know, for 2 years straight, we were battling with Bournemouth. Our rivals were Bournemouth and Wolves. And every time, if we chop this, then we could go check them our results. So that'd be where it did. Where right now, we did like 33 or something. We just try get to the magical 40. If we're able to do it by December, good. Then we know that, okay, maybe let's try and play Conference League next year and see how best we can do. At the end of the day, my manager has said it. We are not in the title race. We don't even, in fact, my striker says, what is a title race? So me to ask you, what is a title race? I don't know what a title race is. We don't know. Us, we just play day by day. We try play on our own game. If you fire inside, that nice. If you know far too, we go try again next week. Why you pull? First of all, title race, if we buy force, why you pull one force, we make we come day. You put the do your race, we just stop the sidelines by force, make we come day the race inside. Why? We not do any title race inside, though. The best team in the land is Liverpool. Then they score. Even if they know they look like, then they win. If then go win, you know what can we say about a mighty Stoke? Arsenal Football Club. What can we talk about them? You know they are there. They are doing so well. It's not given, but it will get there. You know it will get there. Maybe they don't get enough corners. They'll try and get more corners in the next game. Man City, if they win, yes, like if it's 6 points behind Liverpool. Right. So I don't know why you people want to add this baby horse where when our manager they come from championship, we have not know what we do. We get 84 players, we for expand the dressing room, make everybody, if not somebody, they face somebody else and they change then things. We not get space for dressing room then things. So why you people want by force now, by force that mess or and we don't be mess again. Make we can't do some races that we know we'll run. Make nobody we be fat. Make nobody can't stress we. We know if you run, finish.
Make a couch differently. Fine. You know the title is inside. You try make the magical 40 points mark. Fine.
Don't couch anything.
Do you think? Do you think Chelsea are going to finish above Arsenal? Because right now Arsenal will be first. So I know they ask you whether you go win the title. Right now, the way Arsenal they wobble, do you think Chelsea will finish ahead of Arsenal?
It depends on the number of corners then Gofi gets every game. If they get five corners in the next game, then Gofi score five. All of a sudden, problem day. You see, if the rest of the league know if it defend the corners, then the set pieces, then trouble day. But if the law gets a lot of corners, maybe we go free try something small. That'd be how I'll go answer the question.
Jack. I think you've also admitted that Chelsea are playing some of the best football in the league. Do you think they stand a realistic chance of winning the title?
Thankfully, we have data and history to go by. And we are not going to listen to the nonsense, the Chelsea fans, and the kind of agenda they want to put this fake humble nonsense you are trying to do. The season Leicester City won the league, they didn't come into this. The league thinking they were going to be winners. They came thinking that they were going to fight for a position among the top six, top eight, or whatever. Right? There are seasons where all the big teams they fall, and you have a chance to capitalize on it. You did this, so you be criminal. They not catch you yet. So instead, say you go actually have the confidence of grabbing some glory. This fake humility nonsense is really, really annoying me because look, by next season, you know, if you sign players again, some of the players you sign, you'll be forced to sack them because UEFA they come and they are coming hard. Also,
sorry, why we know if you sign players here?
Also, we'll see Casa, we'll players, you'll be forced to sack them. Some of them, you'll be forced to sack
them. If we sell them, I think we go get some money, take by.
No,
if we sell then, like five academy players, we'll get
then,
like 50 million.
By then, they ban you since they will. And they can't put ban on you people. Secondly, bro, your bloated squad is boding well for you. I mean, we said it. Kudos to Maresca, because in the beginning he stood his ground. He was like, bro, these are the players I want to use. These ones, they are not part of my whatever you want to do with them, do with them. And I mean, it helped. So it didn't bring any friction. The team bagged him and they made him know, bro, this is the captain of the ship. And there's a new coach that came in. I mean, he was a championship title winning coach, but he had no experience like that. The most experience he had was being Pep's assistant before going to Leicester and winning. But right now, we live in a day and age where you can get magical coaches like that because there are nets around and they've gotten a hard working coach. But what is helping them is the conference league they are in. Once again, they get to bench their starters and their star players and benefit from their bloated squad by playing their second or third string players or even some of the first team players on the bench that need confidence. They play there and they come. So week in, week out, they have fresh legs. And also, I like how he manages Enzo and this guy, Lavia, right? I mean, there are times where they benefited from Saicedo going to the right back because they had no right back, you understand? Or maybe tactical reasons he had to play there. So he still gives Endo more chance. And I like how he's actually tactically fluid, but people are not noticing. He can start with the formation halfway. He moves players and changes it, but you will not see. But I think they also benefited from confidence. That is one thing. They are benefiting from confidence because some of the wins they are winning based on sheer confidence. Chelsea is still weak defensively and they can be got at any time. But then again, They are sacrificing for each other. They are listening to the coach. And they have an African info. Jackson will miss, but he will score. So that is boding well with for him. And it's not just him. Right? And it's just... It's, so when it happens like that, it trickles down to the team. Madueke is doing well. I mean, their star player of the season so far between him or Salah. But I think Salah is ahead. Cole Palmer is there. You understand? And I like how he has also managed Sancho. Right? Style is nonsense and he nipped it in the bud early. I like how he has managed Sancho. Right? But Sancho too has gotten a new baby now. A new baby girl now. So maybe that's also influencing is this one. So it happens. So the motivation is there. But I don't want to hear Chelsea saying, because this might be their only chance of snatching the league or doing something better. Because this was the same season Leicester won, where the big teams had faltered. You are in the title race, whether I like it or not. You are 2 points behind Liverpool. Even though they have a game in hand, you will still be 5 points. Nobody has scored more goals than you this season. You are playing very well. Very, very well. You are what, 7 points ahead of Arsenal? You are four, right? 4 points ahead of Arsenal. Okay. And seven ahead of City, right?
That one is just, you know, anything can happen.
All I am saying is, you are in the title race. I'm not going to listen to all you people.
You forgot Nottingham Forest is also there.
Brother, if you go lead, where you bottle them, you bottled it. I don't want to hear something. Because the Leicester season, we still laugh at Spurs for being bottleless. But Spurs not come in the season, say they can't win title. They can't say they can't struggle for in top four.
We still came in the season so that we will not be relegated.
We know your predictions. We'll go by your prediction. We have a prediction sheet. Did you predict that you are going to fight a relegation? So don't annoy me.
I said we'll be like fourth. Did I just say we'll be like fourth?
And your chair, you'll be like, which fourth? See him. Anyways, so me, I don't want to listen to this nonsense. This is your Leicester season. Better capitalize on it before next season. Amorim and Coles come for your neck.
This is the thing where it's a bomb, you know. See, may I just tell you something right now? Munko be bia, eh? Munko be bia. Mark him for ye.
I had to bring that out of you. The arrogance. They are fake humility. They vex me. But I will bring him out of you. Continue.
You see, make Amorim go bye-bye players. We go meet him for park next season.
You did second. You say you know the title race. Somebody, he decides he will get faith in his team. That one, he ran an event. I don't understand. If you don't get faith for your teammates and you don't get faith for your teammates, that will be fine.
Where we Jesse finish? Where by first, he said we'll be number 18. Make we just run for lane 2. So right now, what we going to do? We for run for lane 2.
He choose.
All I get talk, we see. Next is nothing will happen Chelsea Football Club. We go sell some players. We go buy some players. We go make more money. Right now, you know that we still don't get front of the shirt sponsor. Because as with the base people, who go live on that, everybody unbombs to 10 million. Between they said 60 million flat. United have my money somewhere they want. If you know, give United my money
Soon,
very soon, you go see if we know we'll get that money. I am happy. I'm a very, very happy Chelsea fan. If I don't talk, they are the light. I see say you the mobile players, you know, bomb the best way for that for the league inside. But that's fine. That's okay. Me now, I go big up my own player, Moises Caicedo.
I literally spoke about Caicedo. I don't know what you're talking about.
It'd be cool. Anyway, all I know is he'd be the best way for the league inside. And that question about Arsenal Football Club. Last 2 weeks, I told you that as for the Arsenal people there. It'll be boot for boot. Maybe we know if we take the cap. Because I just think, again, my coach is so wise. He said that anybody that's ready to win the cap does not concede the type of goals you concede. Yesterday, Brentford and Mago, with a win 2-0, 90th minute. Just finish, make we go out. No. We get throwing. Smiley, tell me how it ended up being a goal for these people. We get a throwing. It ended up being a goal for Brentford. Unibab. And so, if you look at those things, look at how young the squad is and all of that, you can understand why Chelsea fans are reluctant to say we are going for the title or whatever. Because at the very least, Liverpool have players who have been there, done that. They know how to win the league. Whether we like it or not, they know how to win the league. They've done it before. So, I think it'll be hard for us to win the league. And let me say, if we know, if we win, let me say if we win the league,
express make a punch some holes in your argument.
Mm-hmm.
Man City, as at our last recording, had gone with 7 games, 1 win. They had won 1 game in 7. And you said that you wouldn't rise them off until it be the last day of the season and it's mathematically impossible for them to win the title.
Mm.
So if 1 game out of 7, and in those games they've made some very silly mistakes and you still weren't willing to rise them off, but your team, you won't rise them off because of some throwing or something. How many mistakes have they made in against United self? See how they lost the game, like they were in the lead within the last 10 minutes, they threw it away. But still, you'd be reluctant to rise them off. So why say that one there, like, it counts, but your own there, like, I don't understand.
Because the difference, it's actually a pretty simple logic that I'm applying here. Manchester City Football Club have won the league 4 times in a row. There's this be what they call institutional muscle memory. It go be kicking at any time. It be institutional. There are no do. When was the last time Chelsea Football Club won the league? No. 2027, no, it be 10 years old. 2027, it be 10 years. When was the last time we were even challenging for the league? Do you get what I mean? So it's not from a place of like, oh, we don't want to do some full humble. No. This one, it be... one change the way it happened. Where be like say first fastest fingers where we do fast. All the banter aside, I expect that at some point in the season, Arsenal Football Club will start creating chances out of open play. And this criminal terrorist football in the play then will stop. At some point in time.
I don't want them to stop, actually.
Me, mom, who wants? I don't want them to stop. I want them to
better
continue like this.
Continue to play. Better continue to Stoke City. Yeah. Better continue to play like that because Arsenal. See, I always want them to fail and fail badly. They are a big disgrace because if you listen to how they've been moving for the past 3 seasons, you would think they are the best. They are the second best team on the land, and City is winning the league by some miracle.
Crack, sorry, but so Arsenal fan be like 2 weeks ago, then they listen to a program. Then basically, he opened the mouth talk, say Arsenal are actually the best team in the league. It just happened that they are not top. But you continue.
And such these delusional things, if you talk, the moment they don't they go talk, say other friends be delusional. Are you mad? I didn't know we can be celebrating back to back second and trophyless. The guy has been there for what, 6 or 7 years. He not win 10 top. 10 top safe. United sacked 2 managers.
FA Cup.
FA Cup, he was an interim manager. You know, be young. Then go to the final before he come. Make a call for it. Then go to the semi final or so before he come. We can't take over, go win that final. That one said, you COVID FA Cup, go make a call for that.
So big experience day top.
Oh, that was no being do. Make a call for that. You understand? The guy has been there for what? 5 seasons now or something like
five
that.
5 seasons, almost 6, yeah.
Going to, like, and the guy has been a fail. Like, the guy no fin win. And Arsenal fans are so delusional. We are only going for the bigger one. But, if you don't know how to win small ones, you think you can win big one? Like, I don't get it. Chelsea's coach, he's a new coach in the Premier League. But he has won a league in the championship. He has actually won. So he knows how to at least cross the finish line. He has that. I didn't know winning when he asked me. He was part of a coaching staff that was winning. What has he won? What's his credentials?
He win FA Cup, where he also win Community Shield 2. You know how hard it be to win Community Shield.
David Moyes crowd winning Community Shield. My dream. Let me tell you something. See, all these excuses they are making for the guy, very soon, the Arteta out will be back again. Trust me. Because this season
starts,
was...
It starts. They say yes. Yes, you know, say he hook Rice, then Odegaard, like 60th minute. And that is such a criminal endeavor because, sorry for cutting you, but that is so criminal. That guy, I sure say he did come from Afghanistan. Well, lie. Because how would they play Everton? They get 21% possession. They ended the match with 3 defensive midfielders. Your subs, you make 2 of them be defensive midfielders. How? How?
No, say that guy's wanted, a criminal. I mean, he wanted his Nyami Boamikona. Do you know they've not scored... I've forgotten the stats, but they've not scored a non-corner goal
October.
Since October, right?
No, since November. In December, they've not scored a goal from open play, but the context is that they've only played 3 games.
Bro, they're my open play. They're my XG from open
in the
play.
League, in the Premier League.
Bro, they're my XG from open play for the last 3-4 games. Every time, it'd be 0.1. It'd be less than 1. 0.6, 0.8.
Their nonsense sideways passes, back passes, sideways passes. It will eventually catch up to you. Because instead of investing in a striker, you still invested more in defenders. That, me say, I said, that calamari buy, then go buy. That's, you know, they make sense.
If you talk, then, what be your name? Corey Go can't argue plus. You say, he'd be very pivotal player. You see that right now, they are not talking about Kai Havertz anymore. All of a sudden, Chelsea fans, we don't know Kai Havertz. All of a sudden, we there here.
You are not winning.
We there here.
You are not winning a league with Kai Havertz as your striker. He's not a striker. You go by the guy as a midfielder. Nyami Boaminti, you can't turn the guy striker. A couple of goals here and here. Then you can't do hey.
Then try for the midfielder. Now bouncing Kaku.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why they bought him. They bought Kai Havertz to play in the midfield.
They tried him in the midfield. It was so bad. They didn't have a choice. They had to convert him to a striker straight. They said, if we don't convert you to a striker, you then the pillar for the Arsenal, for the Emirates, the defensive design.
For Arsenal to allow Liverpool to be leading is a disgrace based on their fucking mouth, running their mouth up and down. You would think the season City decides to dip. It's our season, Arsenal fans. But look at them. Look at them, Oliver. Just look at them. This draw server, go do over 0.5. For sporty bets, Arsenal made a chop my money. Foolish team. He only scored 1 goal against Everton. 1 goal. He only scored 1 goal. Just 1 goal. Ekome. Ekome.
You know, I'm sorry that we have diverted to Arsenal, but it's important for us to talk about it because Arsenal fans, then they move some way, beer. If they win something before, like we die, about 20 years, most, if you're an Arsenal fan, you are 20 years. You are 20 years this year. You've never seen your team lift a premiership before. But you talk to people where that my teams win maybe 2, 3, 4.
All they've seen their club win is FA Cup.
FA Cup.
Not even FA Champions Cup. League. Not even Europa League. Nothing.
Champions League. Maybe they should play Conference League. That might be where they can start their European year from. Maybe, just maybe, they should go and try the Conference because clearly Europa and Champions League is too tough for them. They think they are a big club. They are not that big because big clubs win big trophies. And you're out here winning FA Cup. You know, if you chat, they move anyhow. They talk to everybody anyhow. You, mom, they can't advise Liverpool. What have you won?
Hey, imagine. Look at them.
What have you won?
Look at them.
Hey, Jews, moving on to Liverpool. Real quick, I just want to
them,
ask
them the real best team for the league. Make we not move anyhow. Them be the real best
team
because them Uda, alongside Uda, Chelsea. Uda.
You they jump the
Liverpool alongside Chelsea are the biggest, the best teams in England.
So, how can 1 billion fan bottle just be the best team in England?
So yeah, over the weekend they also managed to record an impressive draw against Fulham, and it was impressive because they got a red card in the first 15 minutes or so and still managed to play very well. Yeah, they still managed to play very well. They still managed to dominate, actually, even with 10 men against Fulham. So, Crack, I know you watched that match. You have a lot to say about that match. Like, what were your thoughts? Because a lot of us are already tipping Liverpool to win the title now because it looks like they're in a comfortable lead. But what... exactly did you see in that match to convince you even more that this is the team to watch?
I always say that once Liverpool have their spine together, it's always going to work for them. Alisson is back. Van Dijk is there. They have their midfield there. And they have Salah up top. 11v11. Very few defenders can have Salah 1v1. So already, Salah is taking two of your players. So already, Liverpool has a man advantage. One. So when they go 10 versus 11 safe, that's when you've actually matched them. But even with that safe, you still can't leave Salah alone. So what worked with them is Liverpool's fitness. These boys are fit. These boys are fit. Like, Robinson gets a red card. Just check the work rate of Diaz and Salah up top. And it's not as if like Diaz, they lose ball. The guy know they lose ball or misplaced passes. If he's coming at you, he is completing the take on. And then you have Diaz and Salah up top. Come to the midfield, right? These guys are working. And then you even push Trent to join them there. I was watching the match and I was like, guy, Liverpool still looks like a team that can win this game. 1-1, Fulham went 2-1 up. And I still didn't think Liverpool was going to lose that game. They have strength in depth. Harvey Elliott is back and was on the bench. And Jota too was back. Jota was on the bench. Imagine you having such game changes from the bench and Jota comes to score a goal still. I said, that guy is one of the best and most, not one of the most underrated attackers in the league. Diogo Jota. That guy is very good. Whether you bring him for the bench or start, he has an impact. And watching the game, once again, it's like confidence, right? Strikers that play against Van Dijk, I always say that, look, if Van Dijk has played in the Drogba era, in the Rooney era, in the prime Van Persie era, players that can just give you sweat and shoot from the back, Suarez, Torres, even some of these players from like Everton, back then, you know, we had real men as strikers, right? Right now, it's like every striker wants to finish in the box. Every striker wants to end up in the box. So when it's 1v1 and they can't take on Van Dijk, then either they go back or they make him win. No. Bruh, I'm telling you, shoot from the back. You can cause damage. For some funny reason, this guy scored a long range last match against Liverpool. And everybody was talking about it like, oh, wow, what a goal and all this. But back then, hey, backless era, it was normal. Bangers from 30 yards, 20 yards, it was normal. Right now, it's like, it's easy for Van Dijk to defend against some of these attackers. It's so easy. It's like boys against men. Like, it's so easy. Like, nobody is really troubling him. He's vocal and he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's world class. I'm not saying he's not world class. But then again, he's still not having adequate strikers that can actually expose him. No, we don't have that. Like, right now, everyone wants to play false nine or wants to come and join play, pass here, pa, pa, pa. Before you reach the box, you are tired. Or sometimes you want a striker cut back. He's not there. Right? So Liverpool has the advantage over there at the back. He's marshalling there. And as I said, that midfield, they work. Even if they bring Curtis Jones, he works. So they are riding on the confidence. And as Mama will talk, muscle memory of winning. They've won league. They won league title. They won Champions League entrance. In the past, you still have world-class players. I say if you have three world-class players in your team, it will manifest any two show. They have three. They have Alisson. They have Van Dijk. They have Salah. And Salah alone is a constant goal threat. So even when they are 10 goals down, you can't leave Salah alone because when they play, you know that diagonal pass that they play, then he will chase. No? Ah! They were doing it against Fulham. So I was telling people that if you watch the match, I was watching with Philemon, my friend. If you watch the match, Salah was hardly crossing the center line. So because of that, Fulham too has to leave defenders there. You know, normally 10 against 11, they'll press you and dominate you and all those things, right? And give you pressures. But they couldn't because Salah and Diaz were up. So you had to also respect them. Where the game changed a bit was when they brought Nuno Milk inside. When they brought Nunes, that was when
Dawizi, that be name.
When they brought him now, now we're like, striker. Liverpool them attack. Freddy. Liverpool them attack. Fuck up some more. We not take Chebia when they score Liverpool. But as Jota come, no, where we're not talking, something fee happen. So me, I wasn't surprised that Liverpool drew the match. But even 10 against 11, they showed a mark of a champion. They were relentless. They never gave up. And I said, Liverpool might be the fittest team in the league. And last time, what I was saying is, if you check their age, they are young. The boys are young. McAllister, Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, they are all young. This guy is still young. If they are able to, Robinson is still young. Trent is still young. Konate and Cody are still young. Van Dijk have not top 33. Alisson not top 35. Keep idea 47 if you cut. Diaz not top 30. Most of their players are in their 20s. Jota safe. You understand? And they've had experience and the cohesion. They've played together for a long while. So they've gotten a new coach. It didn't really take much. Change much. That's what I like about him. Because he knows the squad. But they play to what he wants to play. But he didn't have to change much because that was a winning team. And it's manifesting and it's showing. So even they are really challenging. Even the time you think Liverpool will disappoint, then they spring up some win. But they are still not, I wouldn't say they are running away with the title because they have a very good team like Chelsea on their heels. So it's a two-horse race. Now with this one, so yeah, so I don't. It's a two-horse race, so I don't like how some teams want to ride themselves off and all this. So yeah, thank you.
Well, for me, I think again, as Cracker said, there's not much to add. Fantastic football club, and let's not forget they are doing all this without signing the player they signed self last minute. Self, he said right now he play under 21. He build. This day come. You see, the thing about Liverpool is, outside of Salah, the rest of their front three will not give you consistent numbers like Salah does week in, week out. But they have this way. So right now, it will be Salah and Jota. Salah, Jota. The moment Jota and Ongo dry up, no, Gakpizi go take your own character. Gakpo go can slot in. No, Gakpo the fool, Gakpo inside the fool, no, Diaz go take your own camp. Maybe Diaz head or something. No, even Dawizi Krago can't give you some last minute banger like last season. That would we can't score two against Newcastle. You can't give you them cantons. And I like as a slot, I don't know. I just respect him so much. He's the guy is such a good coach. You can tell that. He's one of those football nerds. He reads the game well. He's able to make the right changes when he's supposed to, how he's supposed to. Maybe his only small problem, and maybe that even might be a problem of Liverpool and less him, is that he doesn't rotate as much as he should. So that might hurt him maybe later in the season. But that might just be an effect that Liverpool don't have enough players in each position for him to rotate in terms of the quality.
They actually don't.
Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, he doesn't have a choice. If he wants to go far in every competition, he has to play consistently his best 15. Consistently. But as Craig said, they are really fit. So if luck is with them a bit, and their players are able to stay fit, and they don't get these injuries, because it will be a big worry for them, for instance, if Salah gets injured. And everybody keeps saying Salah, not because the rest of the others can't produce. But, I don't know, Salah go, as he cut in hair, no? He do reverse something. So, he energy for calm down, he go up. where he go unlock some new creative bag. I don't know where he go take from. He go flip with the Christmas he do and he de celebrate. You know?
That was maybe that he
then they take open new bag where we don't know. Last year, Santa visitor. Where they give him new creative bag. Because some of the passes, in fact, if you look at the goal with that Gakpo scored yesterday, it was a deft touch by Gakpo, but the cross from Salah, pinpoint accuracy. Gakpo not for do too much. If he take it in here, it's more pim-pim, take touch in the chin, go ball. Go ball. If it be Darwin Dianka, you know, go be go, but we are glad it wasn't Darwin, right? But at the end of the day, this is how you know that they are getting into the mood of we are better than everybody else, so we will take this league. Do you understand? We are better than everybody else, so we will take this league from you people, like kids that we are taking candy from, you know, at a playground. I'm very interested to see how they go forward. You know, I don't want them to get injuries because I don't wish evil like that on my enemies. But yeah, that'd be the small 1 meter we'll take our crack up.
So before we wrap up, let me just say a quick congratulations to Ademola Lookman for winning the African Player of the Year. Very, very well deserved. Like, Charlie, this was one of those years where it was obvious who was going to win. They probably didn't even have to do the whole event. Just take the team, give the guy actually hat-trick in the Europa final. For the past 3 years or so, he's been killing it for Atlanta. So, yeah, it's one of the most well-deserved awards we've seen in recent times. So, yeah, congratulations to him. And honestly, like me, he's somebody who I think a big team should take a gamble on him. For me, I don't even think it would be a gamble because for the type of football he's been playing over the past 3 years, I see him making something like even at the very least, maybe a Sadio Mane type of impact at the top team. So me, like, he's somebody who I think the big teams should keep an eye on. He's been doing it for Atlanta. You've seen it in the Champions
League. A shout for maybe Manchester United, since your left side is not so strong.
I mean, it's something that I'd be interested in seeing how it plays out.
For who?
Because for United, it's not something I'd be entirely opposed to, especially with the kind of manager we have. Like,
which player are you talking about?
That's for my Lookman. I mean, for the kind of manager that we have, media, like, it's not something that I'll be opposed to. Like, I'll be interested to see how it works out.
But that guy's trajectory too is actually amazing, though. Because yeah, missing a penalty.
I remember there was a time at Fulham.
Missing a penalty that relegated Fulham.
Panenka.
And everybody shitting on him. And to go back to a team like Atlanta and revive his career and be their best player and all those things. Charlie, it's crazy. Like, it's actually crazy. It's one of those inspiring stories.
The way things are going this season too, it's very possible that Atlanta might, like, being the mix for the Serie A title, because at the moment they are leading the table. Inter, they didn't start too well. Napoli too are playing some good football, but they don't score many goals. So, like, it's something that can happen. And if they do win it, so there would have to be a conversation about the magnitude of a title win like that. But actually, we'll cross that bridge.
But that would actually put Gasperini in some type of conversation, though.
Yeah, how many points are they ahead at in the Serie A, by the way?
Oh, Serie A table there is very tight at the top.
One, two, five points. Yeah.
Like 5 points separating the top six or something. So the title there be tight, but we'll see how it plays out. But anyway, we've come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done this already, please follow our social media pages: Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast, GCR, TikTok, After the Whistle, YouTube, After the Whistle Podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube. Please subscribe. People, you gave us pressure for a long time that we should create YouTube. So please subscribe. Even if you are one of the people who listens on Spotify, subscribe. If you are one of the people who listens to the podcast on Apple, subscribe. Amazon, subscribe. Just subscribe to the YouTube. And share the episode links. Share them, like, when you are listening to the episode, after you finish listening, anytime. And also talk about the episode. If you want to talk about the episode, tweet at us, comment in the YouTube comments, Instagram comments, TikTok comments, or you can also use the hashtag ATW podcast and just also give us suggestions on stuff you want us to talk about. So if there's any suggestion you have, if there's any game you want us to play, anything at all like that you want us to do, share with us and then we'll see how best we can fit it into the episode. I wanted to talk about FPL because it'd be like at the rise on the FPL table.
FPL if you the rise, fucking guy.
Yeah, my interest in FPL started come back, you know, because over the past 3 weeks or so, I rise from 104th to like 52nd on the table. So suddenly my interest in FPL come back, but it's too late now. Next week, with FPL roundup will come back in full blast. Because be like, I don't know, my ginger small for FPL. So yeah, again, we've come to the end of this episode. Guys, thank you for joining us. Van Gelder Crack, as always. Hopefully next week we'll have a special guest to keep things a bit spicy. So yeah, Charlie, ATW dominate the conversation.
This has been a Gold Coast Reports production. Catch up on episodes and discover more shows from our network on listen2gcr.com.